dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. This is show 262, our ninth one of season 9. And like all, they're brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, just behind the Hampton Inn, right off of Bridge Street. And they're open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can give them a call at 740-773-7529. And you can also find detailed information on their website, which is TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. I sometimes wonder if, when I die, if that won't be on my epitaph at the cemetery. I've said that, 262 times now or something like that. Who knows how long this will go. Welcoming in, everybody. My name is Bruce Knox. I first bring in the younger of the two gentlemen. Less experienced, as it were, Mr. John Bruce, to say hello. John, welcome in.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And then I want to say hello, too, to Shane Combs, as he is here in the studio with us. Shane, you're looking mighty well these days.
Well, thank you. I'm getting my notes finalized here. Always one of my favorite shows of the year. Looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure it is. We're going to go over, among other things here, I'll kind of tip our hand a little bit, your all SVC volleyball squad. But before we get into this stuff tonight, I wanted to talk to you gentlemen. Last week, if you'll recall, I put extra effort into the bump music. And I think it was after the third one, I asked you two if you noticed a common theme. And you both just kind of – it reminded me of Shane describing the hot dogs at Huntington. He didn't have anything. And you guys didn't have anything with respect to the bump music either. So now that you've thought about it, you've probably listened to the show, you know, 7 times since then. Do you have anything about the bump music from last week? Either?
I don't.
Okay.
All I know is it was some older TV shows that were much older than me.
Well, yeah. Okay. So you actually picked that up or did someone tell you?
Well, I figured out a Hawaii 5-0, but I wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me read to you this these texts that I got from a listener. It says, "Listened to the show and thought I was watching CBS in 1987. And I'm going to read this verbatim first, and I'll explain it later. Shane and Chris aren't well-rounded in pop culture. I said, so what was the common link? And the texter says, I didn't recognize the first one, but since the others were Magnum PI and Hawaii 5-0, I'd say TV shows that have been remade. I was just going for instrumental. I said, you're a winner. First one was Rockford Files, an NBC show about a sloppy private investigator. So the common thread I was going for was instrumental police slash private investigator TV shows. By the way, the co-host is John, not Chris.
And, I was going to say, he's already dating himself because I graduated with Chris back in 95, and the co-host is John.
Yeah, yeah. So he said, ha-ha, Chris is his older brother. I'm getting old and senile. And I said, your efforts will, of course, be recognized on the next episode. Not only are you an athlete and an athletic supporter, you're also up on pop culture. And he said, ha-ha, a regular jock strap. And I will divulge that this came from one Mr. Matt Combs, who has himself been a guest and a host on this here podcast. So, that was so much for that. I decided this week, what the heck, I'm just going to pick 3 songs. So, But
now, I have to throw out there that my brother Chris would not have missed those.
Really?
He would have picked it up. Yeah, he would have picked it up immediately.
Okay. Well, I just thought we'd have some fun there as we go into the into this show because, you know, I put all that extra thought. I must have thought about that for 5 minutes last week, guys, and then, you know, nothing. So Eric Cox was the one that gave so much grief to Shane for the lack of description of the hot dogs at Huntington a couple weeks back. And Eric, if you're listening, if you could help me out and perhaps spur my boys on to some more thought outside of athletics, that would really be a good thing at this point. So, okay, we'll move on here.
I didn't realize there was anything other than sports.
I didn't think so. So, Shane, what's on the agenda this week?
As always, I think we want to give a shout-out first here to our sponsors. You mentioned Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Certainly never want to take them for granted. You know, it's always neat to hear the people around the community refer to the show with Triple Crown's name, and rightfully so. They've been such great support. We also want to give that thank you to Advanced Services. They're in their first year with us. Advanced Services has been super in terms of coming on board with us. North Fork Animal Clinic, the job that they do and the support they've given to the website and to our show. And then, of course, Crown Hill Golf Club and how much they do for our local athletes. Just, again, Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, and Crown Hill Golf Club. Just want to thank them a bunch. You know, we have a lot going on this week. Bruce, I know you'll give a shout out to those sponsors throughout, but we have some football to talk about. We have some grades to give out in volleyball, and we had some state performances here in this past week, some state bound athletes still this week. But mm-hmm. Seems like it's become a real tradition on SVC Sports Talk that on this particular show, when the volleyball league regular season comes to an end, mm-hmm. that we've always kind of given an effort to our young ladies that make up one of our really arguably our best sport in our entire SVC, which is volleyball. And I try my best to put together a all league squad. And I guess if you want to start with that, that wouldn't be a bad way to go. I know next week, I think we're going to have John do the soccer, but you know, this week I'll kind of take the lead there if you want me to. And you walk me through however you see fit, but let's go ahead and name our all SVC volleyball squad.
Okay, we'll do that. This is always something that we get a lot of feedback from and a lot of different thoughts and so forth. So why don't we start off, Shane, if it's okay, with the coach of the year?
Well, absolutely. I think this is a pretty simple one. You know, Coach Jess Sullivan there. I always want to say Jess Rogers there, right, at Westfall. You know, but Jess has done a super job. She returns there to Westfall. I certainly think we viewed Westfall as a contender, but I don't know that they would have been my pick to win it all. I know the reports in the summer were really, really good. The team starting to take another step, but she's been terrific in leading that group. And I guess, Bruce, anytime I do this, just the coach in me is so appreciative of the effort of all the coaches. You heard me say in the opening there that this sport is as good as it gets in the SVC, and I think our coaching has a lot to do with that. I think all the way down with Paint Valley Piketon, and I think people don't understand how hard it is for those coaches to try to bring programs from the bottom up when you're dealing with, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 games in the SVC every year. It's tough. And you've seen some of that tournament success from Paint Valley. Then as you come up the standings and you start to look, I don't think there's been a team get hit by graduation from last year to this year harder than Zane Trace Huntington. Remember me talking about that in the preview. You look at Zane Trace getting to 13-9 and 7-7 overall. Coach Davis done just a terrific job there. And then I think you could argue that this is one of Tina's best jobs in her long tenure there at Huntington, 15-7. This is a team that I thought would be competitive, but I had no idea would quite get to this level that they've been able to take a couple really young kids in key spots and really go next level. They're at 8-6, and they weren't that far off from being close to 11-3 and being right there at the top. So just an incredible job there. I also wanted to give a shout out to two coaches that have been all over this award and in our league hunt the last couple of years with Natalie Stahl and Jimmy Hutton. You know, Natalie had a situation early in the year where, you know, it didn't go the way Unio had planned and they had faced a lot of adversity, but I think, Bruce, you have to give credit where credit's due. I think John will tell you this. You know, that team really pulled it together. Mm-hmm. I mean, keep in mind, Uniota finished 16-6.
Yeah.
That, you know, 10-4 in the league. Certainly not what they wanted, you know, when you look at maybe the preseason stuff, but an awful good year. You know, Natalie there in 3 years at that program, gosh, I'd have to do some quick math. I want to say, you know, somewhere around 63-11. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's pretty close. That's getting it done. You know what I mean? It's, that's really good. So, and then Southeastern, I know they had a tough go of it, but I don't think people understand that Southeastern just 4 or 5 years ago was coming in a long spurt where Southeastern volleyball wasn't real, real good. And, you know, they had a couple of unique athletes, but, you know, Jimmy's coming there and, has done some terrific things. He's lost two really important players in the last two off seasons to other league schools. He's had his libero hurt this year. They get her back. They go on a nice hot streak. Night before the Westfall game, they lose another key player. It just seems all year long they've been fighting that uphill battle. You know, so they've been keeping it together. And then, Laura Smith certainly at Adida doesn't need me to sit here and, you know, rattle off her resume. I just told someone the other day that whenever Laura decides to not do this anymore,
yeah.
Whatever day that is, the very next day is when the SVC needs to name this award after her. Mm-hmm. So that right there is the highest praise I can give in terms of not just volleyball, but, you know, she set the standard for all of us at one of our league's smallest schools.
Mm-hmm.
She set the standard for longevity and consistency and just high-level performance. So whenever I do that, I think this year's Coach of the Year honor was very simple to give out, but I always appreciate 3, 4, 5 minutes there to just go down through the, because I coach myself, coaching's hard, and I appreciate coaching, and I just want to always take that opportunity before we honor the kids to go through and honor the coaches there. So I appreciate that.
All right. So let's, why don't we go into the player of the year and then maybe just go on into the first team as well.
Well, I think that makes sense because you think about it, when you start looking at your player of the year candidates, you know, obviously those are going to be kids that fall into the first team.
Mm-hmm.
About the time we made the turn there at the halfway point, I started looking at some kids, player of the year caliber. Obviously, Westfall was sitting undefeated at the time, so Phillips and Williams were right there at the top. So, yeah, and speaking with them on SVC Sports Talk, Phillips has been dominant at the net. Williams is such an all-around talent that's had so much to do with their success. And obviously, the two Huntington kids were on my radar. We talked to Allison Basie and Megan Steele earlier in the year, and Allison's just a unique athlete at the net. She's probably a little bit more get off the floor, take it over at the net style kid, where Megan's probably the more polished all around volleyball player. But really, both of them together, you know, Allison's really had a nice serve. You know, Megan really can defend the back row as well. So really, those two have just been elite. And then obviously our reigning player of the year, Skylar Heiss, has been in the mix. I'll tell you where I ran into my most trouble. This list wasn't as hard as some years for me, Bruce and John. I tell you that. There's about two or three key spots I ran into a lot of trouble, and up top here was where I found probably my biggest thing, and this is probably where people disagree with me, but I always say it's, you know, these are my opinions, it's my list. Yeah. If you don't like it, make your own list. You know what I mean? I mean, you're not going to hurt my feelings. But, you know, Skylar Heiss comes back as the reigning player of the year, and, you know, she's had a terrific year, and she's a terrific player, but in this particular year, I think Kristen Phillips will start the list. Okay, so I think Kristen Phillips will go in the player of the year spot rather easily, especially when you consider the league champion and so forth. What happens to me on the defensive player of the year is we've had a year where we're playing like 80 kids. The libero position's been all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, Uniota's made a change. Adina's made a change. Southeastern's has been hurt. You know, it's all over the place in terms of – I just asked myself at the halfway point there, who are the best two defenders? And I kind of evaluated this the rest of the way out. Who are the best two defenders I had seen throughout their career and through this point? And for me, it's been Skylar Heiss and Hallie Pinkerton. And, you know, throughout their career, I remember last year watching them back and forth, you know, head to head in that Southeastern Uniota. And then as I come in this year, when the Southeastern knocked Uniota off early in the year, mm-hmm. some of the defensive efforts she had given there, same way with Pinkerton. even though she did not play libero much into her senior year, you know, you're talking about a kid with 1,500 digs, and I just haven't seen very many kids defend in that situation. So I guess this is where I'm going to just go with my eye test. I'm going to go with my gut a little bit, and I'm just going to go ahead and put with Phillips there in the POI spot, I'm just going to kind of give Heiss and Pinkerton kind of that defensive share, which puts them on first team by the way I do this. Because, again, most people that have listened to this know that I do three teams of seven. It's much different than the league. I think the league completely drops the ball in how they do their all-league for volleyball. And that'll put Williams, Basie, Steele. I'll just kind of let you figure out the order there. I don't know that we have to really argue on those.
Right.
And then my toughest spot right here at the end of first team, I think it would be really unfair to shut out Adina, but I guess the way I kind of look at some, in a year where we play 80 kids, I guess I would probably, again, on career and all around, I'd probably put Amber Cottrell. That's the one that eats me up the most. I think it's almost unfair if it's not to have an Adina kid in the top seven. Mm-hmm. But as I get to my second team, I think I'll probably explain myself a little bit better there. So with Cottrell playing all the way around, I guess that's where she gets the nod, because we just don't have very many kids that play all the way around, because we have a lot of teams playing 10, 11, 12 kids in the rotation. So Phillips, okay. Player of the Year, Heiss Pinkerton, Williams, Basie, Steele, and Cottrell is the way I'll go there on the first team.
All right. That's your first team. Let's go ahead and continue then with your second team.
Well, before the Adina people start throwing their phone out their car or something at their computer, like I said, it really did bother me. But I think what happens with Adina is this. I've always, and my wife even gets on me about this, I've always, as I learned volleyball growing up as a big sports fan, it always kind of, you know, I don't want to say bothered me, but it was always weird to me that some of your best players only played half the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like you only play across the front row or whatever it might be. So Adina has such a specialty rotation this year where a lot of people. So on my second team, out of seven spots, we're going to go with four Lady Warriors. I just couldn't sort them out. So they ended up almost all clumped together there. So you have Jenna Martin and the job she does at the net. McKenna Lovely is one of the few kids before an injury that even play all the way. Or she might be the only kid that plays all the way around for Adina and before an injury. Ellie Harper and then Cameron Carroll. So, again, I'll let you kind of decide on the order there. But those four Adina kids are all going to be in this second team. And I think what that represents is you're still getting probably kind of like four of the top 10 players. So that still represents where they finish in an outright second spot. Carroll moved over to the libero spot early. Well, right around the second half of the year, I guess, right at the turn. And she's terrific. Not only is she a great passer, she has a really good serve. She just kind of gets that hook into that deep corner that really eats people up and does it at a pretty high efficiency rate as well. You know, Harper is starting to play a little bit more all the way around. People know that listen to the show how much I love Martin and what she gives at the net. And then Lovely, like I said, McKenna. McKenna's just about the only Lady Warrior that plays all the way around, so she's impacting all six rotations. And I just think there's value in that has to be honored. Joining them on the second team, I guess I didn't get too much in up into the order within the team. Certainly Casey Pierce of Uniota, Hallie Bennett of Zane Trace, and then Hannah Longheat of Southeastern. Pierce is probably a first teamer in terms of the second half of the year. She was certainly right there over the last what would you say, John? Maybe 8-9 matches. She was terrific. She was really supplying some of the offensive punch at the net. Bennett is a no brainer. She could have even pushed for a first team spot in some people's minds. She's a great all around talent. Again, Zane Trace, a team that plays about 12 different kids every night. She's one of the few kids on that team that impacts all six rotations. And then Hannah Longheat, she's a kid early in the year. They, again, going back and forth with some different position ideas. Once she settled into the rotation and Southeastern started to get healthy, really took off from that point. So, again, I'll let you argue the order, but somewhere in the second team, we got to get Martin and Pierce. We got to get Bennett and McKenna Lovely. We got to get Harper, Carroll, and Longheat.
Okay. So that includes your second team. Let's move on to your third team, and then if you want to tag that with your honorable mention, that'd be okay.
Sure, I can do that, because again, it makes sense down at the end to kind of just almost think out loud when you do this and let people know where you're coming from. I'd mention three tough spots. I'd mention the how to handle the Pinkerton heist situation. Mm-hmm. I'd mention the end of the first team there with the Adina kid versus Cottrell. And then my third one would be down here, as always. I think this is any list, isn't it, guys, where you get down at the bottom of a third team, the honorable mention, you kind of always are going to get that. There's always going to be, you know, some choices throughout all the schools to add one more kid. At this point, I think Paint Valley certainly gets an Olivia Smith. I know the record's not very good, but in a year where, again, you'll hear me say this three or four times throughout my list, if we're going to play 77 to 80 kids throughout the league, I haven't really seen a team that Olivia Smith wouldn't do something for. You're a very talented kid there at Paint Valley, can impact at the net a little bit as a strong side hitter, a good defender, plays really hard. I also think you have to get Alyssa Steele from Huntington, and it's not even really about the number. I mean, yeah, she leads the league in assists, and she kind of was the missing ingredient that we weren't sure that Huntington was going to have. And gosh, outside of the obvious ones up there on first team, I don't know how many more major graduations we're going to have in our league than her. When you consider the likes of Basie and Steele coming back, who's going to set them the volleyball. This is a really, really key player, but Alyssa's really grown into a nice athlete, does a nice job for that team. Certainly, even though we had given them two of the top four or five players in the league, we certainly have to take care of our league champions. I think you have to get Marissa Mullins and Claire Latham here. Mm-hmm. We have to get Mullins in the middle opposite Phillips. She holds down that those rotations 4, 5, 6. Does a real nice job in the middle defensively and supplying a little offense. Latham does a nice job setting opposite of Williams there, giving a little bit of hitting as well. Just can't say enough about Westfall and the way those kids have really fallen into their role. Now, this is where it gets tricky. I said earlier with Zane Trace is the same way. Zane Trace plays 12 kids. So, Bruce, you and John across the table there from me, you could almost write all 12 Zane Trace kids, they'll toss them at a hat. I can almost draw about three or four of them out and make a case for them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's that nutty. After Bennett, it becomes very, very even. Throughout career and throughout being asked to do the most, I'd probably give the nod to Lainey Hill at this point. Now, at that point, though, I have a couple spots left, and this is where it gets really, really tough. Giving 21, you know, I hate to shut out Piketon. I mean, I know they don't didn't win a game in the league this year. I really like the Lamerson kid. Jazlyn Lamerson's a really, really talented young player. Maddie Scott's a good player. McDowell does a nice job passing. You know, you can go down a little. Really, really stuffs the stat sheet for them. I just don't know in this particular year if they do. But you know, I would probably go Lamerson in the top 21 just because, again, I think you have to evaluate the individual player. The nights I've watched Piketon play against competition where the passing and the setting's been able to deliver her the ball, she's been able to deliver some offense. She's been able to do some nice things. I think her skill set certainly would allow for roles in many of the rotations around the league. So to shut them out, when I extend my list to 21, where the league only does, I think, 16, I think it would be unfair to just completely shut Piketon out. Now, with that said, number-wise, if you're going to crunch the numbers, you probably deserve to go to a Zane Trace kid at this point. But this is where I'll just kind of think out loud for you, and I'll kind of get to my honorable mention as well. The problem is, what Zane Trace kid do you go to? You also have Lexi Lockwood, who to me would be a no-brainer top 21 if she didn't miss so much time early in the year. So I would probably favor Lockwood if it wasn't for that. You certainly have Lexi Scott, Lexi Betts, Emily Allen, Hannah Hill. All those Zane Trace kids are in the mix. I feel like I've taken care of Adina. I thought about Hinneberger here, or even a Hirsch from Huntington, those types of kids, Stanforth, McFadden, Paint Valley. I really like Cree Stawley. If I were going to give Uniota another one, Cree Stalley maybe didn't have the offensive year I thought she'd have at the net, but Cree really does a nice job, very similar to Emily Allen there at Zane Trace. Cree Stalley does a super job defending the net. Amaris Cooper is probably an honorable mention. Ava Eldridge and Emily Coleman, along with Cree there at Uniota, Lauren Daniels of our SVC champions. So if I were going to go into that final spot, you just always have to follow your gut here. I think you could bring on 7, 8, 9, 10 volleyball people, and we could disagree forever on this final spot. Mm-hmm. I would probably go Lexi Scott just off the eye test. But again, if you set a Betts or if you set an Allen or you set a Hill, if it weren't for the injury or the missed time, I would probably go Lockwood here. But in this situation with where Zane Trace finishes in the league, I think it would be fair to give them a third, and I'd probably go Lexi Scott there. So certainly love Betts and Lockwood and Stahl and some of those other kids I mentioned. But I think that's a long list. And the only other thing I'll say in closing here is people always say, you know, Shane, when you go to 21 and you still name all of those honorable mentions, do you feel like you're watering it down? And that blows my mind when I hear that, because even with all the kids I just mentioned here, I'm guessing I probably mentioned somewhere around, say, 35 kids. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, again, we have a league where we're playing almost 80 kids. You know what I mean? So we're still not even naming half the kids. And go watch district volleyball and watch how we set the standard across all of Southern Ohio, and then come back and tell me that we're watering down any list, because, you know, sure, we'll get some talented Wheelersburg teams every now and then. We'll get a talented Alexander team here and there. But more times than not, our league is setting the standard, and I think you're going to see that again this year. So very confident with my list. I certainly had those two or three places I know I'll get feedback, but I'll be honest, I kind of enjoy the feedback. I don't mind the criticism. I don't mind. At the end of the day, my list doesn't mean anything. I'm just a fat dude on a website giving my list, as I say every year. So it's one of those where the official list will come out there probably, depending on when you're listening to this, probably on Wednesday.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll post that out there. But I know next week, Bruce, you're going to turn it over to John there, but I appreciate you giving me the chance every year to honor the great kids of our volleyball league.
Yeah, it's really good. And we do covet your feedback out there from the listeners, because we like to see how you think about things too. So a little bit later in the podcast, we'll show you how you can contribute some thoughts to us by email, through Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. And we'll get to that a little bit later. And as you mentioned earlier, John will give the soccer teams that next week. So we've got to look forward to that. We start with an all-Ohio theme as we look back at a weekend of solid state performances and look ahead to a few other state-bound athletes. As we get into our talk here, our segment on the state and so forth, it's going to be brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. You can look them up on the web, advancedservicesHVAC.com, or give them a call, 877-947-4499. They are celebrating 20 years of serving Southern Ohio, and you can schedule a consultation today on their website. Again, advancedservicesHVAC.com. That's Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Well, Shane, Friday and Saturday, it was exciting. I was kind of following the web, actually your Twitter feed, for the league and the Westfall girls and the Uniota boys at the OHSAA State Golf Tournament. So why don't you kind of give us a recap on how they played?
Yeah, exciting time. You know, Friday and Saturday, the technology's improved so much that you're able to follow things a lot better than you used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started doing this and following kids up at the state tournament now, I appreciate Joe Boggs helping me find some links and some different things. You know, we had talked mulligans earlier in the year, guys, and, you know, Joe Boggs is one of those guys. He doesn't need one of those. He just tosses it down the middle of the fairway all the time. That's a boring way to play, in my opinion. But he was telling me the link there, and Coach Schultz was sharing it with me as well. And I was able to kind of follow exactly not only what the team was doing, but the individual cards and so forth of the kids. And I thought both teams represented the league quite well. We knew going in that Westfall probably had a better chance in terms of stacking up team wise. Mm-hmm. They flirted with the top 10 all weekend long. And then, you know, Maddie Schultz, congratulations to her. If you're following the tweets, as Bruce said, the top 10 All-Ohio finish is just a sophomore. So what a year. Talking about sectional champion, district champion, and now All-Ohio finish individually. Really proud of her and happy for her. Teammates, Ella Seeley, Emily Cook, Maddie Cook, and Elizabeth Hart. Congratulations on just a super, super year. It's been a lot of fun to follow you. And I know they'll have some of this talent back next year. But you can go on the website if you want to go hole by hole and look back at their different scores. The one thing they kind of got a tough draw, guys, was Saturday morning. My understanding is on their early tee time, the temperatures had crawled down into the high 30s. Mm-hmm. And if you're familiar with the OSU course, the gray and the scarlet side, it's a very shaded golf course. It's got a lot of trees, a lot of different things. So I'm sure in the first 4, 5, 6 holes, some of those young ladies were probably playing in temperatures we just haven't quite had this year yet. These are some of our first cool days, and that's not to make an excuse for them. It is what it is, but it's just if you've played golf, you understand that the colder temperatures and so forth can just, you know, make for some challenges. So they were able to fight through it. Maddie, particularly, they were able to fight through and kind of save that second round as the scoring seemed to go up a little bit on that second day and get that Ohio finish. For Uniota, again, we kind of knew they were up against it a little bit more, maybe in their team scores. But gosh, what an incredible accomplishment to make it that far and represent our conference. Ty Schoblock, he finishes off an outstanding career. I also want to highlight Levi Gerber, Quade Cottenbach, Braxton Platt, and Jace Tucker. Just really proud of them as well. So Coach Schultz, Coach Drummond, congrats. And SVC Golf represented quite well as we put a capper on golf here in 2019.
Shane, did you happen to see the videos that were coming out of, I think it was Wyoming? They were having their high school finals, and they were playing in snow. And
I didn't see that at all.
Yeah. They showed video of some of the you know, people getting ready to hit on a green, and it involved actually wiping the snow off of the green. And I thought, my wipe of the snow would be about 3 inches so that it would curve my ball where I wanted it to go and so forth. But that was something. If you get a chance to look at that up, that's something we hopefully never see around here. But congratulations to the Westfall girls and the Uniota boys at the OHSAA State Golf Tournament. We really were pulling for you on those 2 days, and it was exciting to just kind of watch it from afar. Now we have a few more state-bound athletes in tennis this week, as district champion Sylvia Gray of Uniota and district runner-up in Adina Madeline Shipley, are both state-bound. John, why don't you give us your thoughts on this accomplishment?
Well, I believe it's the first time in SBC history that we've had multiple athletes reaching the state tennis tournament in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really cool accomplishment for both of them. Awesome that they got to play each other in the sectional final and the district final. Really cool for our area, because tennis doesn't seem to get a lot of attention. Now, Sylvia has over the last few years, but it'll be cool to see if Maddie can keep it going. You know, we have a chance for a 7-year window here where we'll have appearances out of the SVC, because Maddie is only a freshman. I think, yeah, it looks good to at least a couple of those years make a push.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually able to catch up with Sylvia this weekend about her upcoming appearance. Bruce, could you play the audio for us?
Sure. Here we go.
So I'm here with Sylvia Gray, getting ready for her fourth trip to the state tournament for tennis. How does this one feel? Does it compare to the others, or is it kind of special on its own?
Yeah, it's definitely the most special year because I've done it the past 3 years, but this is kind of my last time ever doing this, and it's my last go around. So it's really sad, but I'm really excited, and I'm thankful for all the support I've had the past 4 years with everyone, and my friends, my family, like my entire team. And I'm just excited. It just depends on my draw, you know, how I end up doing. So I'm hoping to get a decent draw my last year so I can go maybe even a little bit further than I have the past 3 years. And I'm hoping Maddie from the end, yes, she gets a good draw also, just because coming in her freshman year, she's going to be a lot more nervous. So I'm glad I can be there to help her through it all.
You mentioned Maddie. I know you guys kind of can practice together going into it. How cool is it to have someone else in the league to be able to go and make that trip with you?
Yeah, it's for sure really special. Every other year it's been someone from Wheelersburg or even like just schools that I'm not really as close to. So it's really cool to have one of my best friends coming with me to like enjoy my last time ever going there. And we'll get to warm up with each other and kind of just be there for each other throughout this like really important journey for both of us. Just kind of different because it's the last time for me and it's the first time for her.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, sum up, you know, 4 years undefeated in the regular season. You know, how much fun has high school tennis been? And knowing that you'll be playing at the next level, you'll still be continuing to play. But how much has high school tennis meant for you?
High school tennis has meant the world to me. I've never really been on a team before other than softball. So it was really cool because tennis usually, you know, it's a really individual sport. But just having the team, like, part in high school, it's completely different for me, you know, like supporting each other through everything. It's been like completely different than tournaments, and it's been a really nice change because I like to think of high school season as like my break throughout the year, just because it's a little less competition, but it's really fun for me. And so it's going to be really different going into college with like the heavier competition and everything. So yeah, I'm really grateful for the past 4 years just having this as like an opportunity that most people don't get.
Well, thank you and good luck.
Thanks.
And that was Enya to Sylvia Gray. Kind of mentioned, you know, if she was hoping to get a good draw, she will match up with the third place finisher out of the Southwest, a junior out of Indian Hill High School outside of Cincinnati. So the way she talked about it to me earlier was that it was somebody that she is familiar with. It would be a very difficult opponent, but it's somebody that she has beaten before in the past. So it'll definitely be a chance for her to move on past the first round again this year.
John, when exactly does she play? Do you know?
She plays Friday morning, I believe at 9, mm-hmm. And down in Mason.
Okay. Is there any way, like, you know, Shane was talking earlier about how we could follow the state golf progress, and I just wondered if there's a similar type of situation where we could follow her games or something like that. Do you know of any?
I'm not sure if they have any live, like that was awesome this year with the golf,
yeah.
But we don't have school Friday. So I will actually be at her match.
Oh.
So yeah. So if you follow hashtag SBC Sports Talk, or just me, you'll be able to see, I'll give updates from her match. I'll be watching her first. I think her and Maddie might play at the same time. If they don't, I'll have updates from both.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll have updates as they happen down there in Mason.
All right, that is wonderful. We'll look forward to that, and we'll look forward to watching your Twitter feed. So while golf was finishing up for its 2019, the SVC football race appears to be just getting started. Up next, we recap football Friday night number 7, and we look ahead to number 8. Well, this segment's going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill Golf Club, located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call at 740-986-4653, and you can look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. Give Kevin, the purveyor of putts, the deliverer of drives, and the saver of strokes a call, and he and his staff will of course, take care of you up there at Crown Hill Golf Club. Guys, as we approach football, as we do each week here in the SVC, because we feel it's our job to keep our audiences fully informed, and because Shane Combs and John Bruce have been known to consume various and sundry delectable treats while supposedly observing SVC sports events, and furthermore, because Shane needs a wide receiver to outscore a kicker in tonight's Monday night football game, as we were recording this on Monday night, we pride ourselves in bringing you the following segment. Our, of course, Eat It segment, as we kind of find out what the gentleman had this week. Were you both in the same place this past weekend, or were you out different places, Shane? What was the status?
Yeah, John and I were both at Uniota the other night. We both kind of stepped back and let Derek take the updates for us so we could just kind of relax and watch a little football. So I know I went with the little unique selection with the fried bologna on the bun with some cheese. And then I had, I guess you'd refer to it kind of as a taco salad type of dish. It was outstanding. I would say the combination I would give between the 4 and 4.5 belly rating.
Wow.
It was good. I think I would give the shout out just because it's a unique selection. I always like to, on a Friday night when I'm going to the concession there, look for the unique choice that maybe you don't get all the time.
So fried bologna and cheese. Yeah. Oh, that
little
sounds good.
Cheese melted there on top, right off the grill there. And they offered it the regular bread or the bun. I went with the bun, and it was nice.
Okay.
It was good.
Well, John, did you partake of any of this delectables, or were you strong that night?
Well, I made sure to get there early this time because last time it didn't work out.
Right.
So I got there before the fish fry, and just on the Uniota side was like a 45-minute line like it was the week before. And I went with the fish sandwich and hand-cut fries for the fish sandwich platter.
Wow.
Now, the only issue I had was that it was I probably should have went with the rye bread instead of the white bread. So that was my own mistake. But it was still very good.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I will say, they have a kind of a toppings area, almost a toppings bar, where you can make your fish, they also had chicken tenders over there.
Nice.
Yeah, they had lots of selections for how to make it the best that you would make it. So I was very impressed. I would go 4.5. Bellies and possibly more if I would have maybe gone a little bread situation.
Oh, you can't ding them for the bread choice. I mean, you just
right.
Can't.
That's why I still went 4.5.
Okay. So, all right.
Now,
all right.
Now I'm saying maybe with a different bread, it goes up to the 5.
I see. Okay. So, yeah. Well,
now the rookie mistake might be if you're going to wait 45 minutes in line, you might want to go ahead and get one of each just so you can have comparison on the show. So,
well, I got there almost 45 minutes before kickoff. So that's why I made sure I wasn't waiting in that line again.
Yes.
All right. Well, Shane, I love your rookie mistake.
Yeah. Every now and then, when in doubt, get them both. that's what I would tell the SVC fans out there. When you're going out on a Friday night and you're up to concession stand and you're like, do I get this or this? You can never go wrong with just getting them both.
Okay. That's probably an axiom that we need to write down someplace. So. Well, guys, Shane, first, how do you feel you guys did with the preview last week of the Paint Valley Uniota game?
Well, I think we did really well. I think we expected a competitive game. Final score certainly a little deceiving. I mean, you're talking about a 13-0 game at halftime, a 13-7 game mid-third quarter. And, you know, John, I felt like we did really well. I go back into my notes, and I was looking where you had talked about the special teams. Uniota had come out of the half and really had kind of put their their mark on this game, that with the opening drive, they really went to Carroll and got him going, and they go down and go 13-7. They stop Paint Valley, and then I thought the play of the game was when Uniota hits the punter. It extends the drive. Paint Valley goes on to score and opens back up two possession. Then you carry it on. I had talked about how Uniota balancing between how many times were they going to try to go through the air compared to just, you know, riding their big time back, and I thought that particular matchup, the Uniota throwing versus PV secondary, played a big factor early in the game. The Cruz McFadden play was as good a high school play as you'll ever see. Derek Webb had some really cool photos of that where he went up and just snatched it, you know, one handed. And not only did he snatch it one handed, Bruce, for the interception, he had the presence of mind to stay on his feet, mm-hmm. ended up returning the thing about 50, 60 yards to set up a score. And then obviously the knockout punch comes from the Andrew Walker play. And Andrew's a kid that, it's just he's product of program. You know, he's a product of this is a kid since junior high that, you know, he's a weight room kid. He's a football player. He's a hey, I'm going to be a Paint Valley football player. And that's kind of what happened there. So, you know, John, I guess when you view special teams and Paint Valley secondary talk, those were certainly two areas that we highlighted last week's preview. Am I missing something? Just kind of your thoughts on those two or three really, really big plays in that football game the other night.
I think you really nailed it. I thought Uniota's defense actually played pretty well. They were in a short field most of the game,
yeah,
because of the turnovers, which you mentioned. That was one of the things we didn't talk about was the turnover difference, which really reared its head in that game. You know, not only on special teams, I mean, like Uniota was in good position. They were going to get the ball at the 20, 30-yard line after they went down and scored, and then that roughing the punter, which was a good call.
Sure.
Yeah, it was just that it was so far out in the field. It was just like kind of strange to go after it. And obviously it didn't work out and it got turned. And then the Walker interception was, you know, right after. And that was you just knew it was the game. I was very impressed with Paint Valley's ability to kind of contain Carroll. A couple plays early in the second half. I mean, he ended up over 120 yards rushing, but I mean, that's going to happen with somebody as good as him, and especially because you knew Uniota was going to run the ball. So I've been impressed with Paint Valley's secondary in the two SBC games I've seen them play with Adina and Uniota. They've made kind of bend but don't break in those games and kind of making big plays. Obviously, Cruz is just outstanding, great all-around player. That interception he made was really special. But they make opportunistic plays, and it's why they are still undefeated in league play.
John, real quick from a Uniota perspective. Sorry, Bruce, I didn't mean to cut
you
off. I wanted to get your take on that third quarter. I almost got the feeling that, okay, maybe they were trying to save a little bit of the workload, get to the half and go. You know, if they don't rough the punter there, do you think the first drive is kind of an idea of what we were going to see from Uniota's play calling in the second half? And then once, you know, they rough the punter, they go down two scores, and then obviously once they get down three, now you have to scrap the entire game plan. I mean, I'm not trying to make too much of that one play, but don't you feel like that almost just completely scrapped the entire second half concept in terms of what Uniota was looking to do out of the half?
Yeah, because it looked like Uniota was just going to go run, which they were able to do on that first possession. But like you mentioned, once they got down the two possessions after that play, and then they go with a early pass and then the pick six, and that was – now we're just kind of didn't know what they were even – what the goal was, because with Carroll moving to quarterback, he's not going to be able to throw it real well. But, I mean, obviously he's going to run it. So they did kind of just throw everything in kind of disarray, and the really good adjustments they made at the half kind of had to go to the wayside because of that. I mean, really, it was about a 3-minute span, starting with that penalty.
Shane, what are your thoughts about both teams moving forward now?
I think for Paint Valley, I certainly think they still – miss Price a lot. This is a team that it's the first time I'd seen Paint Valley in person. Yeah, I've obviously been following them in great detail since the injury other than the night itself that he got hurt. And just the organization in and out of the huddle, the ability to get to the line of scrimmage, the ability to do some different things at the line of scrimmage, that I was picking up on that they were able to do with Bryce that maybe they're not able to do now is certainly a factor. Now, with that said, though, Ian, under the situation he's been put in, Ian Cockrell's done a super job. Kevin Cooper came in the other night. They had some package in there for him. You know, you could see some nerves and some different things, but he did a really nice job. And I love the leadership of how, when he did have a few miscues, how the older kids just jumped right in and just, It's just an easy group to root for. It really is. Braden Eisen special. That offensive line was good, and when he gets to the edge and gets going downhill, what a load! I love the defensive look where Lane Mettler's kind of back, more standing up and flowing to the ball, making plays. Petey Bowles in the middle of that defense, really good. Remember, I had said I thought that they had more favorable matchups when they play a team that's going to be a little bit more run oriented, or a team that maybe just has the one unique pass catcher. It's a team that this Paint Valley defense probably going to match up with better. Now, with that said, down the line, the Southeastern run game is a whole different animal. And I guess I would ask you this, John, because you're maybe more qualified to say than me. I still think Uniota is a really good football team, but I also know what can happen sometimes when you feel like you're going back into this week's practice and you feel like all your goals that were out there in front of you are no longer there. That stings. You know what I mean? That's hard. But now, as competitors and the types of kids I know they have there in that locker room, I feel like they're going to bounce back and really challenge Southeastern. Do you get the same set? Where's the mindset of this Uniota team going forward to play a team like a Ruby, a Nusser, this offensive line in the Southeastern attack?
Now, I obviously they were really dejected after how Friday went, especially in that second half. But I really think that they will look to bounce back because this is kind of a test to see, you know, kind of what the legacy of this team will be, or kind of the senior class, because they've made three straight playoffs. They're not going to make it this year unless something insane happens.
Sure.
I think it was still like a 1%. So obviously probably not going to make the playoffs, not going to win the league. So what's their legacy? Are they going to show how tough and gritty they are, which they've done throughout their careers? And that would be a perfect way would be to bounce back on Friday. And they could probably look back at 2 years ago when they were all really, most of them were getting, you know, I know Kenton Richter was starting to play a lot more at that time when they went out to Southeastern 2 years ago and lost, with Weisskopf and Ford and Carroll and Skaggs and Diamond. Those guys were all playing big roles in that really good team from a couple years ago. You know, this could be a way for them to get some redemption. And I think, you know, they've got the right coaches to get them reorganized. 7-3 isn't a bad thing. A kind of letdown coming in on Friday, if they're not ready, it could get ugly quick, because that Southeastern team is – that offense is dynamite, and their defense is really opportunistic as well.
Guys, can you give me some quick thoughts about the rest of the league?
Yeah, I'll jump in there and say that I think that's well said, John. I think that you know, Uniota, I do expect to – I don't want to say they're playing with house money, but, man, when you look at what they've accomplished over the last 3 years, I know it's not what they wanted this year, but certainly this career is going to go down as one of the more successful senior classes in quite some time. Moving around the league, I thought Edina looked really sharp, and now they're in a position of their schedule with Huntington, Zane, Trace. They're really going to make a playoff push here, and they'll have the showdown there at the end. Piketon, for the first time, maybe just kind of hit a wall. They've really been playing a schedule. I put on the website there, guys. I don't know if you caught it. The six losses are 33-9. Piketon has played. So Their last three games they play, the teams enter this week with a 6-15 record, with a 2-12 mark the last 2 weeks there. So this Piketon at Westfall matchup is very intriguing, because if Piketon could go and do some things, they certainly can move up anywhere from one all the way to two or three spots up the standings here, John, just in the last 3 weeks. So I'm still intrigued by that. I guess my question – That's pretty much my notes, as I'm real excited to see Southeastern face the gauntlet here down the stretch. I guess my question to John would be, you know, maybe about Edina, the overall playoff picture and the SVC getting three as a fan, or would you love to see them spread out? Would you love to see a head-to-head where we're guaranteed a week 12? Just kind of what we're getting to that time of year where you can't help but pull up Joe Idol's page just about every day and start studying the numbers.
Yeah, I took a long look at it today. And there's a really good chance. I mean, it was weird on that Fantastic 50, the Drew Pesher site. It has Southeastern not as a lock, but they need to finish 7-3 to get in the playoffs. So I'm pretty sure that means they're a lock, because they've won seven games already. But if Southeastern wins two, kind of any combination of the two of the last three, they're going to be a top two seed. If they win one, like let's say they win this week, they're going to be a top three seed. And Paint Valley and Edina have a really good chance to lock up the 1 and 2 seeds in the region. So, you know, we could see three home games.
Wow.
It's a pretty good possibility to play three home games in the same region. So if we would take care of business there, there's a good chance that they would see each other in week 12. So that I wouldn't mind seeing two SVC teams play in week 12, you know, to have a chance to get to the regional final, which I'm going to go back in the preseason. I predicted that we'd have someone in the regional final. So,
yes.
I feel great about that.
So you're saying you would love to get bet on us winning our home games in the first week so that we could get the all SVC and the semifinal to make sure that we get at least one team into the final. You know, you're saying, okay, I got you.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping happens. I mean, obviously you still have to win the games.
Right.
But being where we are in the region, those aren't easy trips to get to any of the three places that they're going to have to play, and not easy places to play either. So, it's definitely a possibility. Hopefully things kind of roll the right way for us. But it looks really, really good right now. Unless something crazy happens, for the SVC to get three teams into the playoffs once again this year.
Interesting. John bringing up, predictions from the past here. We'll have to look at all of them perhaps, John, as well. So not just the ones that are coming true here, guys.
Right.
Up next, we talk Westfall's outright title and look at how the SVC is prepared to set the standard once again in the upcoming volleyball postseason. As we talk about volleyball, this segment brought to you by North Fork Animal Clinic. Look them up on the web, northforkanimalclinic.com. Their phone number, 740-773-7387. Give Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff a call. They're located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. We appreciate their sponsorship of this segment. Guys, first we're going to do a little grading here, since you both dabble in the academics. We're going to grade the regular season. And what I thought we'd do is start off perhaps with Piketon and Paint Valley first. Shane?
Well, I talked about it a little bit earlier. I think with Piketon, it's almost an incomplete grade. I don't know how you can fairly grade something that's so early in the process. I think it's something that you have to give Coach Lytle some time. you know, on the Paint Valley, I think they're starting to climb. They obviously get that crazy monkey off their back in terms of that league streak and so forth. They're coming off postseason success as we record here on Monday night. I know they just beat White Oak and they'll advance to the sectional final again this year. Obviously going to play a very good Notre Dame team later this week. I look forward to going down and watching that and having updates. But, you know, it's still a team that, you know, is very, very capable. So I just feel like they're moving slowly but surely up, you know, to that C minus D plus level in terms of where they're climbing the ladder. You know, now as they get older, you hope that they can start to, you know, they won some sets against a couple of the top teams this year. Hopefully they can start to build some momentum and do that. I guess, John, a great comparison that you and I could share for maybe people that do not follow volleyball as much is maybe let's bring it over to the baseball side. Okay. I think volleyball and baseball is so comparable that, you know, it's when you're trying to build a program from the bottom up. I know we went through this at Paint Valley and you know, we're in a way, we're still fighting it some years in terms of, you know, you start to play a pretty good brand. I heard Tyler Gallion say this the other night, man, we're not playing that bad of football. It's just not showing up in the wins and losses. And that kind of happens in volleyball, doesn't it? I mean, if you're being really honest about looking at this Pike and Paint Valley roster, I don't know best of five how many games they were going to win out of those 12 that they played home and away with those top six teams. Do you see a little bit of comparison that some of the baseball teams in the bottom half of the league fight as well when they're trying to go up against the elite top half of the league?
Yeah, I think it's a really good comparison because, you know, it the top half of the league is so elite, or even top six in the league some years, that to kind of build a program, you kind of have to take some bumps, you have to take some bruises. But as long as you're doing things the right way, you're starting to see some positive results, like you mentioned with Paint Valley and Piketon. Kind of, they win a set every once in a while with the top half teams. You know, that's kind of how you build a program. Sometimes you do have to start from the bottom up. You never really want to, but if you're going to do it, you have to find little battles to win, and you can do it in baseball, like you mentioned with your guys' team. You know, Southeastern for a few years was down, and then they started to make a little run also up, just doing things the right way in baseball. And now it's carrying over more long term. And I think Paint Valley and Piketon, I think with the coaches in place and kind of getting themselves playing a right brand, you know, I could see them having success in the future, in pretty near future, actually.
Okay, why don't we move along then to Southeastern Zane Trace and Huntington?
I think this team, this range of teams here kind of fall into anywhere from that B to C plus range. I would probably favor Huntington a little bit more up into the B range, maybe a Southeastern at C plus. But again, Southeastern's so hard to judge because, as I said earlier when I was talking about the coaches, I guess, John, in a way, Pike and Paint Valley have kind of a blueprint in terms of what Southeastern's done. It's one thing to have some really good teams like Piketon went through a time there with Cammie Chandler and kind of a once in a generation type of athlete, but it's the difference between being pretty good for a minute and then being able to establish that as you go. You know, and I guess Coach Hutton has come into a program like Southeastern. Keep in mind, if you go back the pre Ellis Keynes years here, and then you go back, what, 15, 20 years maybe? I don't know how successful Southeastern volleyball's been. You know, so there's a little bit of a blueprint to follow here in terms of building it slowly but surely, and then taking a step back. But gosh, I'll tell you, I don't know that it would have shy of the injuries. I think when this team's been at full strength, they've proven that. You remember in the preview, John, you're talking about preview earlier. You remember in the preview, I really got stuck on the Lexi Lockwood injury, saying it should be anywhere from 2 to 6. And it did end up being 6. I don't know if it was 2, but I think it's at least maybe a 3 or 4. Keep in mind, I don't think Southeastern was at full strength in either of their Zane Trace games. They weren't at full strength the second Huntington game. So this is a team they beat Uniota once. That was a really quality win. So I think a C plus is fair. B minus, probably Zane Trace is in the middle somewhere. Zane Trace certainly has played a high level. Keep in mind, these grades are still going. I mean, Zane Trace is a team that very capable of playing in the regional tournament. I mean, they're a team that should get to a district final and play an SVC opponent that they've gone head to head with and been competitive in. So I just think Southeastern probably with the toughest tournament draw as a result of this tough regular season. But I just think that all three of those programs have just had real solid years based on what they've had to go through throughout the course of the year.
Okay, let's take the top three here individually. What about Uniodo?
Well, Uniodo, I'm going to be real fair to here. I was critical of them earlier in the year, and I feel like they've been able to get back to the B-C+ area. I think they've certainly been above average, as I said earlier, 16-6. And I guess I've been impressed with how they've been able to find their identity. I thought that was the biggest thing early in the year. When they were trying to put their rotation together, they had the early season injury. They just really struggled to find an identity, and I think they finally have kind of found a little bit of what to hang their hat on. And you, John, I guess I'll ask you even here: how would you sum up maybe Uniota's season and what they still have in front of them here with an opportunity, not an easy draw, but certainly a doable draw? At 16-6, they've certainly kind of kept it together. And as I said earlier, when I was talking about coaches, I give Natalie credit because she went through some adversity for the first time in her young coaching career. And she really pulled the girls together there and kind of kept us together. I think you're talking about a coach that's about 60. I couldn't remember the math I used earlier, 63-11, maybe somewhere in there. Obviously been very successful. John, I guess I'll almost ask you, I know you're close to the situation. I'm kind of intrigued to maybe get your take in terms of, How would you sum up Uniota's season when you look back on it?
I'd probably say a roller coaster. That might be the best way to describe it because, I mean, they started off hot with the nice 5-set win with Chillicothe, but at the same time that night they lose Wheeler. Wheeler goes down with a knee injury. Kind of cool thing was she came back and served a couple times last week. Still obviously not back anywhere clear or near 100%, but she'll be back. So positive for her. But really just up and down, because you also had the injuries with did Pinkerton with the concussion, Paul also with concussion on the same play against St. Trace. Then they bounced back and beat Huntington. It was like, well, didn't expect that, and they went with a really young lineup. Then they had a nice little lull in the middle of the season, but then they finished really strong with the wins over Westfall and Adena, kind of showing what we kind of thought they would be throughout the year. But I do think there's a chance for them to make a little tournament run. It's a really difficult situation having to go to Marietta, and then you get to go play a one loss Vinton County team if you win at Marietta. So it's not ideal, but it's definitely doable with the talent they have. I do think Coach Stahl has done a really good job of kind of piecing together the team and kind of finding a new identity throughout the year. And I think they're playing really good volleyball here at the end.
Shane, let's go to Adena.
Well, I think Adena's pushing the A-minus level. Probably B-plus certainly would be as low as I would go. I think this is a team early in the year. I had a lot of people tell me that they thought Adena was a year away. I could certainly see that. I certainly think there's enough there for the time to be now, and I think they have proven that throughout the year. They certainly were right there in the league race. And they certainly have everything in front of them here in the tournament. So this is a team that, like a lot of teams, have a deep rotation. It's a rotation. They play a lot of specialty volleyball there, where they get a lot of kids across the front, a lot of kids specialize in the back. They utilize some different types of serves. This is probably one of the more aggressive Adena serving teams I've seen in terms of risk reward. So I like them. I think they're built for the postseason as well. I think they're going to match up real, real well in their bracket. So I certainly see where A-minus is still ahead of them. But I think no matter what happens from this point on, I think B-plus would be about as low as I would get.
Okay. And last and certainly not least, Westfall.
Well, this is the easiest one. It's an A plus. I mean, you know, it's that's what you set out to do, right?
Right.
I mean, it's one of those that I know some people would say, well, wouldn't be a gold ball be an A plus type year? Well, yeah, okay, I guess that's right. But in this case, this is a team that I think certainly was a contender, but I don't know that they were the big time favorite. I think a lot of people thought in the summer, like I said earlier, when I was doing my all league groups, that they certainly were on the radar to win a conference title, but to do that, to win what, I don't have that in front of me, 18 games, I think it was overall, certainly go into the postseason with high expectations, certainly would have to really stub their toe not to make the district final. And then at that point, obviously our league's going to kind of decide it head to head, most likely. So, yeah, I have no problem going A plus in terms of what they've accomplished to this point. I think that would be a fair assessment. So great year of SVC volleyball. And man, when you look at what we have coming back, I'm not so sure next year's not going to be better.
I think it will be, actually. So, put out a lot of stuff here in this podcast, and not the least of which was Shane's SVC volleyball teams and so forth. And I'm sure there are some of you that perhaps would like to let us know what you think about that. So in order to do that, we would let you know how to contact us. You can leave us a message on the DBK Media Services line at 740-569-3254. You can contact John Bruce via email at jbruce1018@yahoo.com or on Twitter, where his handle is Coconut Wall Papa, and he uses the SVC Sports Talk hashtag when tweeting about the information for SVC Sports Talk. Shane, you can get him by email, admin1@svcsportzone.com. You can also get him on Twitter, where his handle is SVC Sports Zone. He, too, uses the SVC Sports Talk hashtag. And on Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and the svcsportzone.com profile. So that gives you a myriad of ways that you can contact us and let us know. Reminder, too, we would love it if you would share our posts on Facebook and retweet our posts or our tweets on Twitter. And, of course, if you happen to be an iTunes follower, you could please give us a great rating and also a good review. That would help. Shane, your final thoughts on tonight?
Well, I certainly don't want to shut out cross country. I think my final thoughts would be congratulations to Uniota boys. We talked about them in pretty good detail over the last 2 weeks. I think they run 12 of the top 17 spots, I believe it is, led by our SVC champion, Corey Schoblock. Congratulations to Corey and his group of Shermans. Obviously, they have big goals ahead. You scroll down that page to the girls' side, and it's a clean sweep for Uniota. Zane Trace's Hannah Kerr wins the individual title. Congratulations there. I know Uniota goes 4-5-6 there, led by Spetnagel. What's interesting about cross country, as we've said, John, is now they split up. I know I talked to three different cross country coaches this week, and they knew that the league was going to kind of be tough to reach some of their different goals. But there are three or four teams of a mixture of boys and girls that really feel confident about the upcoming district run. So be interesting to see how that shapes up this weekend. And we'll talk about that hopefully on the upcoming show. But congratulations there, Uniota boys, girls. Congratulations to Schoblock and Kerr. Those are our SVC champions on the cross country side.
John, your final thoughts for this show?
I'm glad you mentioned the cross country. Shane, you know, really impressed with what Uniota did, and boys and girls. Kind of watch for the Westfall girls upcoming also, the middle school. Kind of dominated the middle school meet. So that could be a fun group to watch.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said it. The middle school, if they scroll down on that page, we have those boys-girls results.
Yeah, and then kind of like I mentioned earlier, I'll be down down in Mason covering Sylvia Gray on Friday. Make sure you follow the SVC Sports Talk on Twitter this week, as you know, first week of tournament play, we'll be at a lot of games, doing a lot of coverage, and just make sure you follow along. Should be an exciting time for SVC sports.
Well, Shane, that's going to do it for episode 262, our ninth show. It just seems like it's gone so quickly this fall for me anyway. Maybe the older you get, the faster time goes, I think. So yeah. Why don't you close us out here?
Well, we put the capper on golf there this week, didn't we? So we say good luck to our tennis kids, our volleyball kids, our soccer kids, and then obviously we have football still to do a lot of things. We talked about the cross country heading to the district. So we have a lot going on. We'll follow it all. We'll try to keep you updated as much as we can, and we'll get together on SVC Sports Talk and do it again next week. So until then, make sure you're checking out SVCSportsZone.com, and we'll always try to keep it 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.